Coming to you live from inside of a bank vault, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is a disappointing lack of gold coins. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 2, Mastodons Were Smaller Than You Might Think.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, the last bastion of hope against Donald Trump and his hordes of winged monkeys. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I, like the rest of you, am clearly screwed, but my name is Tom Rich. We're not good at fighting winged monkeys. They're so fuzzy, I just have to hug them.
And they can fly.
That also hurts our cause.
Yeah.
And we're not allowed to have guns anymore since the incident, so really they just have to go a little bit higher than we can throw things, and I can't throw very far. So, hail Trump, and prepare yourself for the revolution. We should tweet him. And see if he'll come on the show.
That would certainly be interesting.
It would be incredible. It would be the best thing that could ever possibly happen.
What if he just showed up here? We were like, no, we meant like a Skype interview. How did you even find out where we live?
It's because I'm a winner. I'm huge. It's going to be great. This interview is going to be the best interview ever. You know why? Because I have interviews that are losers. And I'm a winner. Let's do it. Come on. You're good people. Good people. Beautiful. It's going to be great. Huge. My Donald Trump impression.
Okay.
So what are we talking about tonight, Johannes?
Why do you always ask me that?
Huge.
You're an idiot.
Tonight on the Mildly Alarming Podcast, we're going to be talking about some games we've played, some games we're making. We'll probably talk about bacon, too, at some point or another.
Did you bring up bacon just because it rhymes with the way you said making?
Yeah.
You're a bad person.
I'm a bat person. No, it checks out.
Yeah.
In that you can't see very well, but you can navigate your surroundings by screaming.
And I have leathery wings.
You do have leathery wings. It's true, I've seen them. But they're not actually leathery like a bat's is. They're like bird wings in that they have feathers, but each feather is just a big flap of leather growing out from the wing.
Yeah, they're not very effective.
They're not, no.
I can't use them to fly.
They're incredibly heavy, too.
Yeah.
It's like having two extra arms, and each arm is just draped with leather trench coats. That's more or less what Johannes' situation here is.
It's real rough.
Yeah, he doesn't move very fast on account of the trench coats.
We have an Indiegogo campaign to attempt to fund the surgery. We have so far raised $1.
And that dollar, actually, I'm going to need back because I want to have a Snickers bar tomorrow at work.
You're a monster.
So we're going to be talking tonight, first segment, we're doing a couple of reviews of games we got to play recently and that we want to talk to you about. So first up on the docket is a game you've probably heard of if you're into board games and probably don't care about if you're not, Citadels. It's a fantasy flight game about Citadels is really what it is. It's about Citadels. We got this one in the mail from an anonymous Irishman.
It wasn't anonymous.
Was it an Irishman?
It was an Irishman. A Northern Irishman?
An Irishman?
Sure.
I don't have any Northern
Ireland
jokes.
From Andrew Brown.
I don't have any Northern Ireland jokes at all. Wait, you got to bleep his name, dude.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
Like, it's on his Twitter handle.
Shouldn't we still come up with, like, a whimsical...
He twat at us.
A whimsical substitution for his name?
Okay. Go for it.
I'm going to call him Lawrence.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's fine.
Okay.
So Lawrence of Ireland Abia sent us a copy sent us a copy of Citadels in the mail for reasons that are not clear to me, but maybe you understand it better. And so we played it, and now we're going to talk about it. What do you think about Citadels?
I enjoyed it. It's surprisingly light for a game from Fantasy Flight, and it hits a lot of the same buttons that...
Seven Wonders?
No. I wouldn't like it if it hit any of the same buttons as Seven Wonders in my mind. It hits a lot of the same buttons as Dominion in being, you know, a sort of medievally card-based building game. It's not really a deck builder.
No.
Really?
Not particularly.
But you're building a town.
Yeah.
I mean, we should probably go over more than that. You are building a citadel.
So in citadels, you've got money that you're going to spend to build districts in your city and try to make the best city by the end of the game. The more expense you're able to dump into your city, the better it is. Each round, each player gets to pick from one of nine roles, and you do a draft mechanic. So if I decide to be the architect for the round, Johannes can't, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Each role might get you more money. It might let you knife another player in the back so they can't do anything that round. It might let you steal money. A lot of things that they do. But kind of the game that the game involves making an educated guess about what the other players are grabbing and strategically picking which role you're going to take for the round so that you'll have enough money to do what you need to do or have enough cards to do what you need to do either, because some roles will let you draw more cards than others. And the game plays until somebody has built eight districts, then you finish out the round, score that bad lad up, see who's the winner. Pretty fast.
The districts are a deck of cards that you're going through that are sections of the city that you can build, some of which interact with whatever character card you have for the round, some of which don't. But you need to have eight. So first to eight gets extra points. Other players with eight get some extra points. And then there's other things, you know, if you have one, a district of each of the five colors, that's worth some points. And then the districts themselves, based on their value, are worth color or points. You didn't mention really any of that, did you? Or did I just zone out while you were talking?
I zoned out while I was talking.
Okay. I know how it goes.
Yeah. Thinking about crepes.
Whatever you think crepes are.
It's like a certain type of ornamental wine glass, but only the stem part.
Wouldn't that just be like a shard of glass?
Yeah, it's a crepe.
With a footed shard of glass, yeah. I guess. Yeah. Yeah, sure, okay. That's what you were thinking about?
Sure.
Okay.
No, I was thinking about crepes. No, Citadel's pretty fast. It doesn't take too long to teach. It doesn't take too long to play. And the turns move pretty good, so that's nice. There's some cool strategy to be done with it. You can kind of squint at the other players and guess what they're doing, and you can buy stuff and think your way through it. Well, it's fun. It's a good time.
They've done some good stuff with hidden information, like Tom talked about earlier, about, you know, trying to figure out what... It's not even... I guess it's hidden information or imperfect information, because, like, since it's a drafting mechanic, you have an idea of what cards were available to the character or to the other players as they passed around, but so you sort of know what they might have been able to pick, but you don't know what exactly they picked.
But it does also force you to randomly burn a card at the start, so there's one card that's just eliminated entirely. So you got a little bit of it's still a little bit fuzzy.
Yep.
Also, the version that we got from the King of Ireland of Northern Ireland, that is, was it contains the expansions too. So there is an entire second set of roll cards you can play with, extra random goofy territory or districts you can build. So a lot of variety, a lot of good stuff in the box.
I'm looking forward to playing it again. We've still only played it with two, because we took it to game night the other day and everyone was lame and no one wanted to play it.
Right.
So we didn't play it.
Everybody was just punching me in the solar plexus over and over again.
That part wasn't so lame. I enjoyed that. But I do wish we had gotten to play Citadels with more than two.
True. It was good. It was a good game. Do we have anything else to say about Citadels other than that we like it?
I don't think so.
Mildly Alarming recommends you won't regret your purchase. Citadels is fairly famous, too, so it's like, I mean...
You can probably find it somewhere.
You could probably get a copy.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about crepes now?
No. You don't even know what they are.
They're, like when you are driving in your car and the light comes on the dashboard, but it's not one of the ones that makes you actually stop. You can keep going for a little while. That's crepes, right?
Like it's the light or it's just that?
It's that situation.
That situation?
Yeah.
I don't think that's right.
That's no?
No.
Oh, okay. You sure? I could have sworn.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, we'll keep looking.
I think it's when you have like a flower bed, a raised flower bed, and there's those sort of slats at the bottom that hold the dirt in.
Okay.
And you have them along a sidewalk, perhaps at like a shopping center or an old folks home, and someone pulls a little too far forward in their parking spot and hits one of those slats and it breaks and the dirt comes out, and then some sort of rodent digs a hole and moves in there.
That's crepes?
I think that's crepes.
Oh. Okay. I always
could be wrong.
I thought it was when there was particulate matter in your water, and so over time it builds up in the pipes such that your clothes wears out sooner than they otherwise would.
Yeah, I don't think that's crepes, though.
Oh, okay. Well, if you know what crepes are, shoot us an email. We'd like to know. Speaking of emails, have we talked about readers of the podcast at gmail.com on the area?
We have not.
All right, so we get this serial killer business coming up into the inbox here. Hold on. I'm going to bring this up. I think the world's got to know. It's going to be huge. Huge. Fill the air while I'm finding this.
She left me for a T-Rex. What does he have that I lack? One day we're holding hands and the next she's riding through the forest on his back. I never thought that this could happen, that a love for me could dim. But now she's loving his sweet nothings and she's holding tiny useless hands with him. But his tiny arms aren't strong enough to pick my girl up when she's down. His tiny arms aren't long enough to even reach her on the ground. And when that giant needs to hold her, he can't get his arms around. Can't get those tiny arms around her.
This is the part where I see if I can remember the second verse.
She left me for a T-Rex, and it's driving me insane. His head's as big as I am, but I'm not sure if he even has a brain. What does she see in that behemoth that's got her heart all in a whirl? It must be something pretty special for that tiny arm T-Rex to take my girl. But his tiny arms aren't strong enough to pick my girl up when she's down. His tiny arms aren't long enough to even reach her on the ground. And when that giant needs to hold her, he can't get his arms around. Can't get those tiny arms around her. Now the time for sadness and self-doubt has come and gone. So the next time I see that T-Rex with her, it's on. 'Cause his tiny arms aren't strong enough to fend me off when I attack. I am a raptor after all. He took my girl, I'll take her back. She won't think he's such hot stuff when he is writhing on the ground. And he can't get his tiny arms, can't get those tiny T-Rex arms, can't get his tiny arms around me.
All right. So we're back. There was a brief interlude there. We got an email from readers of the podcast at gmail.com, whose name is apparently Reader Podcast, which doesn't make any sense because podcasts aren't a text medium. It's you listen to podcasts.
Also, Reader Podcast doesn't like podcast reader would be a better name.
We're confused by that. But anyway, came to the Mildly Alarming Show at gmail.com account. And it reads, DNS has been registered and construction of the unofficial Mildly Alarming fan page is underway. More updates to come. Once completed, our thriving community will finally have the online home we need. Readers of the podcast now ask the two exalted authors to become the official Mildly Alarming fan club. Or, failing that, the official unofficial Mildly Alarming fan club, signed a devoted reader of the Mildly Alarming podcast. So, somebody's going to harvest our skins, right? Like, that's what's going to happen next?
Well, so first, on the surface, this email is very confusing because it appears as though they are asking us to become our own fan club.
Which, as anybody will tell you, I am not only my own grandpa, but my own fan club.
And I'm his grandma.
So yes, that is strange.
That is confusing.
That is confusing. I like how we finally get a fan letter to the account that we advertise twice a week, every week, and we proceed to just mock this person on the air. Just accuse them of wanting to wear our flesh as a suit.
Well, to be fair, the subtext of the email was fairly clearly, I'm going to chain you up in my basement.
Right. But you know, buddy, if I had to pick anybody to be chained to a radiator in a torture dungeon with, it would be you.
Oh, thanks.
Because your freakish gorilla strength could probably rip that right off the wall, and then we could make our getaway.
I appreciate that. But reader of the podcast, whoever you are, wherever you are, if you can promise, you know, to withhold on the kidnapping, murder, skin wearing, crocheting of hair into tiny puppets, that sort of thing, then I guess, you know, go ahead.
Welcome aboard the Mildly Alarming Official Fan Club. We will officially give you our stamp.
We should make a stamp.
We should make a huge stamp. It's going to be huge.
I'm already sick of that.
Well, if he wins, you're going to be real sick of it
fast. Yeah.
But yeah, so now there is an official Mildly Alarming Fan Club. As soon as that website exists, we'll put a link to it somewhere where you can find it if you're not a member already. And for a reader of the podcast, we're giving you mad respect knuckles through the internet.
I wonder what the website is, because it doesn't say in this email. It might be just, is it readersofthepodcast.com, maybe?
I have no idea.
That webpage is not available.
Amazing. All right, so let's go on to our second review then, shall we?
Number two. The second one.
Ba-ba-ba-bum, ba-bum-bum. Wait, wrong theme music. All right. Our second review, we got to play a new game this weekend, which we were really excited about, called Time and Space. This is one that I got for Johannes for our annual event that we do around the holidays, where we give each other gifts and pretend that we're not secretly married to each other. Sure, wives don't know. But I'd had my eye on it for a while. I thought it sounded fun, and so we tried it. What do you think?
I enjoyed it. I think we'd both had our eye on it, and then I completely forgot about it.
Legit.
But we liked it, and we must have talked about it on the air at some point, but mm-hmm. The real-time play mechanic is what really drew me to it and continues to draw me to it now that I've played it.
It's a space trading game, so you're producing resources, flying to other players' planets, and then fulfilling their orders with those resources you produced.
Yep.
So Johannes might order two gold resources, and I produce them, and then I fly over to him, and I give them to him, and he takes the resources, go back to the bank, and I get his two little chips representing his orders, and those are my victory points, those gold chips. So it's kind of the basic thing, but what makes it kind of unique and cool is that all of that stuff you're doing is run off of a sand timer. So each player has two sand timers that are a minute each, hourglasses in more common parlance.
Except they're not an hour long or made of glass. But yeah,
why do you have to argue with me?
I was making an excuse for your repeated use of sand timers instead of hourglasses.
Fair enough. And so when you want to do something, you put your sand timer on a thing, like on your ship to move it or on your board to do production and upgrades and stuff. And when it runs out, you get to do whatever the thing is that you wanted to do. Which the mechanic is cool because the first time you do it, you look at the board, you flip both hourglasses or sand timers or whatever, and then you just sit there for a minute going, this mechanic kind of blows, like this feels like it's not going to really be all that intriguing, and then things get crazy. It just gets out of control very quickly as you're trying to balance production and movement and placing orders so that other people can fulfill them. With these two timers, they're just out of sync, so you're wasting time. You're sitting there for 8 seconds waiting for another timer to run out so you can do the next thing. And then, oh crap, you just got to Gary's planet and he hasn't finished his production yet, so you have to wait for the next thing. And that's great.
There's a lot of, like, once you flipped a timer and, like, placed a timer, it is there. You can't be like, oops, I didn't mean to do that, and move it. You have to let that timer run. Mm-hmm. So you might look down and be like, wait, I wanted to put that on an upgrade, not to produce blue. But you didn't, so now you have to wait a minute, and you're just wasting a minute.
And you only have 30 of those.
Yeah, And so you're sitting there, and it's this bizarre dichotomy where on the one hand, you're like, I am just sitting here and there is nothing I can do. And on the other hand, your brain is frantically racing, mm-hmm. trying to figure out what your strategy is and where you can get and when and how. And can you do it in enough time to get the points you need?
Right. In that respect, it hits a similar kind of brain space as the first half of Space Alert does.
Yeah.
Where you're just crunched and frantic and trying to do things. But I think it dials back the intensity about two or three notches from Space Alert. Because I found it not so painfully stressful.
Yeah, it's not as stressful. Well, part of what's less stressful about it is that they did a really great job of making it a game that is at its heart competitive. Mm-hmm. You're competing to have the most points, to fill the most orders in a correct combination and mm-hmm. whatever, to have the most points at the end when it's scored out. But all of your interactions with other players are non-competitive because in order to fill their order, like, you're helping them and helping yourself. There's right. never a point where you're in direct competition yeah. during the gameplay.
So your victory points at the end are based on a couple of things. You get them based on fulfilling a lot of orders from other players.
Mm-hmm.
But so the more variety among players you interact with, the better you do. It's the number of a given color of order multiplied by the number of different players you worked with. So if you're able in
terms of that color.
Yeah. And so if you're able to fulfill orders for a lot of different players, that's great. So you're encouraged to run around the board that way. But, and this is the part I really think is extremely clever, there's four colors of resource and four colors of order. You can only score a given color if you emptied out all of your orders of that color.
Yeah.
So if I want, I could manage to fly around and fulfill every yellow order for every other player, just have this huge long string of them. If I still have even a single yellow order on my board that I haven't at least attempted to fulfill,
yeah.
So that I haven't placed, whether or not it actually got fulfilled yep. doesn't matter, but I have to have at least placed it on my board for somebody to attempt to fulfill, done. I score zero for that.
Well, and in addition to that, your orders they're all sitting off of your board, and if they're off your board, that's where they mm-hmm. make it, so you can't score. When they're on your board, they're taking up space that your ship would otherwise use for other things to fill other people's orders. So you really want people to fill your orders to clear up that space that you use for storage or for producing new materials.
And that really, I think, slides back into the real-time aspect very nicely, because normally that kind of very mathy mechanic
mm-hmm.
would, in a game with just regular defined turns and movement and whatnot, mm-hmm. would encourage the kind of min-maxing that would slow the game to a crawl, because you'd always be having to run the numbers in your
head. Figure out what the best place to put it is, and yeah.
But once you put these sand timers on it and the strict 30-minute timer, you're just like, I don't have time to run the numbers, I'm just going to have to be almost altruistic about it, like, I will scratch your back, just for the love of God, scratch mine.
Yeah.
So it works out, those two systems interact very nicely, I felt.
Well, going back to the comparison to the real-time play in Time and Space versus the real-time play in Space Alert, a couple big differences are, one, with Space Alert, you're working cooperatively with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you screw up, it's like you've let the rest of the team down. Everyone's mad at you, so you're not competing with them, but still when you screw mm-hmm. up, you screwed up and they're mad at you, which is worse sometimes. And also, you do everything and you don't see how it all plays out until the end, until mm-hmm. everything's been done. Where with the real-time mechanic in Time and Space, you're constantly flipping those, well, every minute or two you're flipping those timers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got a lot more, like, not instant gratification, but you see what your decision made happen, good or bad, mm-hmm. over and over again. And so if you want to look at it through the lens of Uva's dopamine cycle,
mm-hmm.
you're very quickly, like, making a decision, making it happen. You have a little bit of a wait because of that timer, but then you immediately see how it went. And, like, maybe halfway through you realize, oh, crap, I put that timer down wrong, and you have to start working around it. But I think that's the best mm-hmm. I've seen, the best application of that, like, repeatedly,
definitely.
Over and over again, hitting that dopamine cycle.
And even the just waiting throughout. On the timers has kind of a fun element to it, too, because you're kind of, I kept finding myself leaning down next to the table going, come on,
Yeah.
and like tapping the top of them to get them unstuck, which happened
yeah,
once.
Yeah, if I it happened a couple times to me. If I have one complaint about the game, it's that the timers are not of a particularly high quality, and if you don't babysit them, sometimes they just stop flowing.
Yeah, that wasn't great. My only complaint about the game, the timers, physical timers aside, yeah. And I don't know if this is actually a complaint or just this is a part of, this is like a break in the game that needs to be there to make it work. When you produce resources with one action, mm-hmm. so you run a timer and you get however many resources it is, and then you have to do a second action to move them to your teleportation pad,
mm-hmm.
and then you can actually sell them. So it's two actions to get resources ready to sell.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt like that was a pretty big monkey wrench in my plans, and was I always felt like it was almost getting in my way, and I don't know if that's a fault or just a or if it needs to be there to prevent the game from just being too fast and furious.
It probably needs to be there. I didn't look at it as a fault, but it was incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
But I think it needs that. I think that's a part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
At least I like to imagine they put enough time and effort into it that they figured out, like, yeah, no, that needs to be there. That's not just a stupid thing we left in by accident.
That was the one action that I kept forgetting about, so that was definitely frustrating. But the one action where I felt like, oh, I have to do that, that's... Ah, mmm. I made those sounds.
Those are the sounds that he made.
I made them.
I was there.
So Time and Space, excellent, excellent game. Highly recommended. A lot of fun. It's huge.
I would give it 4.5 out of 5 crepes.
Really?
Would you give it more? Less?
Well, I'm just baffled as to how you can have half a crepe.
Why not?
Well, I mean, isn't a crepe one of those things that you find out in the western part of the country if you go into a gully and you encounter it and it moves and it has such as an antler? Like, you can't have half of that, right?
Well, why not?
Well, I mean, it would be dead.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't matter if it's alive or dead.
We can't rate a game on a dead crepe.
Well, why not? But it's not that. That's not what a crepe is.
Oh, I thought that was a crepe.
No, a crepe is like when you look up in the night sky,
mm-hmm.
and you see all those twinkling things in the black-blue void. Those are stars,
okay.
Not crepes. But sometimes you look real hard and you think you see something just past, beyond where maybe there is a star or mm-hmm. not, and then you wonder what that is.
That's a crepe.
I think that's crepes.
I always thought a crepe was when a policeman comes to your house and he knocks on the door and you tell him he can't come in. And so he leaves, but then later he comes back and he's allowed to come in even if you don't want him to, because a judge said
crepes
that he could because he gave him a crepes.
Right.
The policeman is said to have crepes or a crepes.
No.
And then he's allowed in. That's not crepes.
No, I think that's, that's E Pluribus Unum.
No, you're thinking of habeas corpus.
Oh, that is what I was thinking of. You are correct. But it isn't crepes. Either way. Aren't crepes... they're a part of the process whereby you... and they vibrate, and then there is a burst of... I'm sorry.
No, you're thinking of Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Crepes, I believe, is when you have a sailing ship and you use it to cross the ocean many times over the course of several centuries and you are Europe. And a crepes is when that happens, that whole period of time occurs.
I don't think that's right, but I feel like we're getting closer.
Yeah, I think that's... We're nearing what a crepes is.
Well, if you know what crepes is, you know where to contact us. But in case you don't, one of those places is on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
It's by email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
And sometimes, too, on the website in the section for comments at www.mildlyalarming.com.
Or just throw up. If that'll work somehow.
We'll look forward to that. And we'll be right back after this word from our sponsor.
You, sir, you indeed. Now don't look so alarmed, my lad. Today is your lucky day. Was that? What? Ah, yes, it clearly is, my boy. See here, look at your socks. They are crumpled about your ankles like the flags of some sinking galleons. What millionaire will take you under his wing and guide you to a comfortable fortune with that bit of leg poking out, hmm? None. But as I said, today is your lucky day. My name is Henryboon Tusk Weathercorn, and I'd like to offer you a free sample of my Weathercorn's Garment Bunks. These minuscule papists will set themselves up in your clothes and keep your socks up, your pocket square unruffled, and your hat cocked at just the right angle. Now, yes, there are downsides to having a monastery's worth of diminutive Trappists crawling about your pantaloons, the chief of which is that they will construct a tiny monastery, and all of the bell ringing can be a bit irksome. Two, one runs the risk that they'll attempt to plant a vineyard in one's hair. But it's all worth it, my boy, for the confidence that comes with knowing that when some millionaire is looking for a strapping lad to take into the business as his sole heir, your clothes will be perfectly arranged to catch his eye, thanks to Weathercorn's Garment Monks. What do you say, lad? Toodle-pip? Rump-de-cuspal? Heh! Chully-do now, lad. Chully-do.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And we're back from the break.
We're back. A dinosaur story.
And we still haven't figured out what crepes is.
I think crepes, and now hear me out. I think crepes is when you go to a physician and they tell you a thing about your body after examining your various parts.
Uh-huh.
And then you disbelieve them. And so you speak to a second physician and they tell you a thing about your body and you compare the two.
No, that's fraud.
Oh!
I think crepes is men and some women have sort of hairs that grow in their facial regions, and they have to remove them with a device of sorts. And the device is powered by a means we don't fully understand, and I think that's crepes.
We'll have to come back to this one.
Yeah.
I still feel like there's unplumbed depths there. What's this segment about?
It's about ogres.
How many ogres?
Well, I guess it depends on
how you count
how many there are. But I can tell you that each one of them has two heads.
Two heads?
Two heads,
that
one ogre.
That is more heads than I have. I only have one.
Just the one head.
Just one head.
But these ogres, they have two of them.
They have two heads.
Two is the number of heads that they have.
And the number of heads that they have is two.
Correct.
Right. So, Two-Headed Ogre, a game we are working on. Two-Headed Ogre is inspired by the old ogre characters from Warcraft 2, the Tides of Darkness, which you could train and build and use them to fight your enemies, and they were cool, and they had two heads. And they were dumb, too. They were just dumb as a box of rocks.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to make a game where players form up in teams of two. Each player is one head. Each team is one ogre. And you have to bicker and fight with each other and try to control your ogre in a brawl with other ogres.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like that would be a premise that would be ripe for amusement and entertainment value if we could just find the right mechanic to kind of encapsulate all of that stuff that I just said.
Last time we tried this, we did it with cards. Was it two separate decks of cards?
I think so, yeah.
And they were broken up into arms and legs and mouths and things, and you had to draw, you had a hand, and you were trying to play them in a certain order to do things, but it got very complex because you were actually navigating a two-headed ogre around the board.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way we had it, the left head could only control the left appendages something like that,
yeah.
So what we really want out of the game is, as Tom said, just this kind of
chaos,
exactly,
yeah.
of two heads trying to control one body and right. fighting over, no, I want to do this, no, you do that, or mistaking what the other head wants to do and tripping and falling over and hurting themselves. So what Tell us what we've done with the current.
So here is the current iteration of Two-Headed Ogre. Each ogre, then there can be up to four ogres, gets a board, which is their ogre board. It can track their life total. And it's got two rows of five spots to put tokens on. Each pair of spots is one action for the ogre. So you're going to put two tokens down, and those two will determine your action for that round.
Each of you will put one token down on a team.
And so the way where the tokens come from is that the game is played in a series of rounds, and during the thinking phase, players will scramble around in a big pile of ogre action tokens in the middle of the board and try to find ones that do what they want. All ogres are doing this at the same time, so everybody's all digging around in this one big pile of cardboard tokens all at the same time, looking for ones that do the thing they want. When you find one, you plop it down on your board in whichever space you want to put it in, but then it's stuck. You can't move it, you can't look at what's face down, you can't do whatever. Now, what's cool about the tokens, or what we've kind of gone with on the tokens, many of them have the same thing on both sides, so it's a fist or a fist, no matter what. But some of them will have different things on each side. So it might be a fist on one side and a slavering ogre-y maw on the other. And only the face down side counts. So when you actually go to resolve the actions, you'll flip all those tokens over and do whatever is on the bottom of them. So there's a little bit of memory, a little bit of potential for chaos there. It's not easy to know what you're doing.
It's important that as soon as you put down a token on your board, it has to remain face down.
Yes.
Once it's been placed, you can't pick it up and look at it to check.
Yep. So you've just got to remember what you did.
There's an element of programming.
Right.
And there's an element of real time.
Yep. And then once that phase is over and it's on a timer, everybody's got to resolve one at a time their actions, and the ogres just sort of do their thing. You see what happens. And there's a system for resolving what each token does, too.
Yeah.
And dealing damage to one another. There's systems for knocking over ogres so that they don't get the rest of their actions, or for having the two heads bop together so that you then have to flip your tokens over and resolve the other side instead of the side you thought you were going to get to resolve. So cool stuff like that. So we're hopeful. We haven't had a chance to test it yet, but we're hopeful that it will be chaotic and noisy and involve a lot of shouting at each other. A lot of shouting.
Just so much shouting.
So much shouting. So what do you think? Where do you think the pitfalls we're going to bump into are on Two-Headed Gogurt?
I wonder if it's going to get old. Because we went from a overly complex game to a vastly simplified version of the game.
True.
Where there aren't really a lot of things you can do. Because there's no longer moving away or navigating toward another ogre, navigating... And like, we used to have pigs that were wandering around the board that you could pick up and nom on to regain strength or whatever. Those are gone. It's either going to be a very short game or a game that you wish was a very short game.
Sure.
And again, we haven't finished prototyping it because we need to make like 8 million tokens. So we haven't done a play of this run through yet, but in theory, I think that's probably the biggest problem we're going to run into is either, oh, this game ended like after 3 minutes, or I wish this game had ended after 3 minutes. And then the problem is going to become, how do we keep it engaging for an appropriate length of time for a game of this type? I think you've hit on a good way to make things chaotic. I really like the grab and scrabble and try to get the tokens thing. Thematically, it doesn't make a ton of sense to be competing with the other team for the tokens, but it doesn't work mechanically if you're not.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's going to need more meat on it.
Stuff. And it's fairly straightforward to expand it from that core.
Sure.
There's no reason you couldn't have pigs that ogres could grab and eat. I mean, that would dovetail nicely with what we've got here. You know, if you do a grab action, you could choose to pick up a pig, and then if you do a bite, you could then choose to eat it. We've already got both those actions in there,
but we don't have any spatial relation anymore, so what's to say a pig is near you?
Pigs are always near you. You're an ogre. They're like flies around dungeons.
I love the idea of the character model for the two-headed ogres in Warcraft just always had an ever-growing swarm of pigs following them around.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Yeah.
Just pigs. They're drawn to ogres.
Yeah, ogres. It makes perfect sense. Easy to add weapons, with the same caveat that it's difficult to say you're near it to pick up.
Yeah.
But easy to add a weapon that then you have it in your hand and that makes you do extra damage. easy to, in theory, to add a board to move around, but hard in practice to make it engaging
to make it yeah work.
Because the key problem, I feel like the first draft of Two-Headed Ogre ran into was that you were spending too much time kind of strategizing with your other head.
Yeah.
And like, if you are talking with the other head and planning out what you're doing carefully to the, you know, and not bickering with him, you're not a two-headed ogre. You're like a two-headed elf.
Right. We needed a timer or something on that so that there was an urgency to what you were planning. And the biggest problem we ran, I honestly think what we had going was potentially functional. Mm-hmm. It was a little too fiddly, but we gave up on it after one play because we, who had designed this game together and were intimately familiar with how it was supposed to work, played it once against Gary and Alphonse. Mm-hmm. And I think one of them was sick and one of them was drunk or something. Like, it was rough. And they were not happy because they didn't fully understand the game, but they were so unhappy, they were like, they didn't want to play it again once they had figured it out. And so we were like, oh, I guess that was a bust, and we treated it as such.
Sure.
Yay, even unto seven generations. And we've never touched it again. So it could have worked maybe the way it was.
I still feel
but
like...
it was quite fiddly.
I still feel like it was far too fiddly. But you're... Maybe... Was so, that crepes? Was what I just did crepes?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Another thing that this game in its current iteration might run into problems with is more than four players. It could also run into a problem with odd numbers of players. It's kind of tough. You lose the bickery, squabbly two heads trying to control one body fun that we liked, that inspired the creation of the game in the first place, when there's only one person.
Yeah.
So an odd-numbered player might require the creation of a troll or something.
Or a three-headed ogre.
Or a third head for an ogre. You have to flip a coin or roll a die or something to figure out if the middle head gets any control. You're like, you just might not get it. All three of them, they have to three-way rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors, some other thing so that a three-way works. Uh-huh.
Brick.
Sure.
Let me ask you this then. Do you feel like it needs the capacity for... Do you feel like it's enough to determine which ogre wins, or do we also have to determine which head on a given ogre wins?
I think that's tough. Mm-hmm. No, I like the idea. I don't know. It might work. Before I had played Time and Space, I would probably say there's not a good way to do that, to have like a really good way to be cooperative and competitive at the same time.
Competitive?
Without someone, you know, one player being more aware of it than the other and taking it every time,
right,
or something like that. Now it might be possible. I don't know if it's necessary. I mean, really, when one head wins over the other, what do they win?
The game?
You get to eat the pig? Like, but thematically, I get caught up on theme a lot.
Sure. They're the dominant head. They're
If you win this fight, you get to take over all of the limbs and the other head just is along for the ride.
Yeah, like
you've won the battle of will and now it's your body and the other one's just like, hey.
You're the better ogre head.
Hey, put a donut in my mouth for once.
I mean, more or less. Like, think about it this way. You're talking about a creature that has two heads that collectively have the out of an IQ less than that of a goat. They're not, it doesn't really matter if one actually is any more powerful than the other or not at the end of the game. If one feels like it won by whatever criteria it was, it's going to spend all its time going, oh, winner, I am. You're dumb.
On the one hand, I was going to say that's hard to translate in a way that's meaningful to the people playing the game until you said one of them's going to be like, huh, I'm the winner, you're dumb. And then I was like, oh, that's how everyone who wins any game for any reason behaves toward everyone else who didn't
exactly.
win. So I guess it's not all that different.
Yeah, so it's board gamers, the board game.
I would not play that.
What about board game designer, the board game?
I don't think I'd play that either. It would probably be €2 for me.
Two-headed ogre, man. Good game. We got to test it, but we're excited.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be good eventually. I don't know if this current iteration will be what we need, but I think it's going somewhere good. I just love the chaos, and which is the opposite of what so many people want out of their board games. Mm-hmm. But I really like the initial impetus for the game of like two heads fighting for fighting for control, but at the same time still having to cooperate.
Right.
And I think if we can hit the mechanics necessary to make that concept work, the game will be great. Mm-hmm. The question is, are we smart enough to come up with those that combination of mechanics?
We're not.
It seems unlikely.
We spend too much time crepes.
And we don't even know what that is.
I think it's when you are attempting to make a soup and you put the various things in the pot, mm-hmm. and you apply the heat element to the pot.
Right.
Only you've used the wrong kind of pot and the liquid comes out of it,
mm-hmm.
and then everything is black.
That might be a method to attain crepes,
uh-huh.
but I don't think that's crepes.
That's not crepes?
I don't think so.
Oh, for sure.
I don't think so. I think crepes are when you own a dog or cat, mm-hmm. and some animal with fur, and you have carpet in your house. And as you know, animal hair tends to get into the carpet.
Right, it's kind of there.
And you have to clean the carpet, and you vacuum, and maybe you rent a carpet cleaner, or you call a carpet cleaning service, and what they pull out of the carpet is gross,
mm-hmm.
and the thing they put it in to dispose of it, I think that's crepes.
Are you sure crepes isn't when you have a good or service that you intend to provide, and you speak to such as a banker, and they provide you with money under terms, and then you use that to to persuade other people to perform tasks related to the good and or service for you, and when they perform those tasks and you exchange part of the money you got from the banker, the federal government asks them for part of that money, I believe that is crepes.
I remember this from school. That is communism.
Oh.
Crepes, I think, are in certain Eastern religions where they have a sort of a pantheon of gods but they're not like all powerful. They're just like, they're sort of gods-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can have a holiday or not. And then when they have a holiday, sometimes for certain of these some of the gods, they might make a sort of potato dish. And I think the device they cook that in, I think that's crepes.
I always understood crepes to be when you have performed the sexual act with with your partner, and the spermatozo is on its way to the egg. And that it strikes the shell that the egg is contained within, and that shell cracks into a pan, and you cook the egg with ham and some little bits of peppers, and you have an omelet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you finish that omelet and you put it in the sink, I believe that crepes is what happens slightly to the left.
That sounds close.
We are just circling it here, but we're just not hitting that target.
Well, to the left of my sink is where the clean dishes go on the drying rack. So, logically, then, my drying rack is kind of shaped like a letter X with a little tail on it.
Okay.
On one side. I think there's a Greek letter that looks like that. But I don't know what it is.
I think the Greek letter in question is sepulchre.
I wish you were dead. In fact, I wish you had never been born.
Is that crepes if you're not born at all?
It might be.
Like crepes? You were conceptually, but not?
You know, I don't know. Because what does that have to do with dishes? You would never have had to know about dishes.
And you wouldn't have had to do or not do them. You wouldn't produce a dish that was soiled
Or not soiled.
Or not, nor would you have moved unsoiled from the unsoiler to the storage unit.
I wonder if what we're circling around, the real definition of crepes, is the idea of not only, not just not knowing something, mm-hmm. but something not being knowable.
Okay.
Is that crepes?
So crepes is the idea that there are, that knowledge is incomplete and incompletable, and that there are such as gaps within it that it has to necessarily and quid pro quo by definition skirt.
I think that's still too on the nose. I think it's just the that and there isn't any.
Yeah, that might be it.
Or it may be the question of why anyone listens to this podcast at all, ever. If you're still with us, I think we owe you something.
Yeah, most likely. I imagine the only person with us now is readersofthepodcast@gmail.com.
No. They've been here the whole time under the table.
I wondered who was tugging my pant leg.
That was me.
Oh, thanks, buddy. They were bunching up a bit.
I have very dexterous toes.
The Dexterous Toes could be a band name.
It could be.
So could the Dexterous Toast.
Yeah, I guess.
I wouldn't listen to them, but...
I wouldn't listen to either of those.
I'm deaf from the waist down.
So say we all. Well, if you've made it this far, congratulations. And you should let us know in the... Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You should send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or leave a comment in the comment section on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarming. You can also listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play Music eventually, where you could leave a review, and you should. Please, 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 oh please, leave us a 5-star review and maybe write something or don't. Whatever. We just like the stars. They're shiny. You can also listen to us on TuneIn Radio.
Or you can go to the Wikipedia article about crepes, edit it, and put your question there, and I will find it, because I never am not reading that article.
And yet he still doesn't know what crepes are. Neither do I. What are crepes?
I think it's when the podcast comes to a conclusion and stops, and then there's no more of it.
Hey, I'm Durrell from Durrell's Sweaty Shirts. And I got some exciting news for you. I got to thinking that it didn't make a lot of sense for me to do just shirts. I mean, sometimes you might need your socks to smell all manly-like, and I can put them under my gut just as easy as a shirt. Easier, really. Socks is smaller. Anyway, I'll take just about any piece of clothes you want and tuck it up there while I build a shed. When you get it back, it'll smell just like you built that shed. Don't worry about it getting other kinds of dirt on it. I take a shower first, so you're getting 100% real Durrell sweat. So, yup, that's about all I got. Y'all have a nice day now. Use good people.